In my book, Are You the Man? 201 Lessons I Wish My Dad Would Have Taught Me, on page 88, I write, people can only lead you as far as they've traveled themselves. So check their journey before you follow their directions. And if there is any man who's traveled to places where most men can only imagine to go, it's our next guest, Kevin DeVries. He's the founder and president of Grace Explorations and co-founder of Base Camp Nation. And Kevin has personally climbed 5 of the 7 continental summits, and he's traveled to over 65 countries across 6 continents. And I can't wait for you to meet him. Real Men Connect is next.
Welcome to Real Men Connect. Are you ready to be the extraordinary man, husband, father, and leader God called and created you to be? Then get ready to receive wisdom and guidance from some of the country's most respected men of faith as you learn everything you need to know to go from good man to great man, God's way. No judgment, no shame. Just real men with real challenges seeking real change. All for God's glory.
I'm your host, Dr. Joe Martin, and every week we interview some of the nation's most respected and accomplished men of faith to find out what it really takes to become the kind of husband, father, and spiritual leader God called and created us to be. And each interview session is packed with practical, proven biblical principles you can immediately apply in your relationships, on your job, and in your community. Today we have with us Kevin DeVries, and Kevin is a father of champions and a son of immigrants, and an inspirational speaker, explorer, entrepreneur, author, and national men's ministry leader from Grand Rapids, Michigan. As the founding president of Grace Explorations and co-founder of Base Camp Nation, from 2009 to 2013, Kevin was a lead mountaineer for a group of scientists in search of Noah's Ark on Mount Ararat, Turkey, which became the award-winning documentary Finding Noah, which was released in theaters nationwide back in 2015. And Kevin has climbed 5 of the 7 continental summits, skied to the North Pole, expedition kayaked all 5 of the Great Lakes, and is a qualifier and finisher of the infamous 2013 Boston Marathon. Now, Kevin, I'm not going to lie to you. When my project manager, Lauren, first sent me your bio, the first thing I thought was, what was Lauren thinking? She knows I grew up in the inner city ghettos of Miami, Florida, and I can't stand the outdoors, Kevin. I don't even like snow, and I don't even drive my car with the windows down. So I was thinking, why in the world would you think Kevin would be a good guest for our show? But Kevin, when I found out your heart for ministering to men, I knew I was going to be stepping out of my comfort zone. I was going to learn a lot about how you use your passion for exploring and to engage and pursue the heart of men. And so I can't wait to interview. So please, guys, help me in welcoming my guest, Kevin DeVries, to the Real Men Connect podcast. Thanks for joining us, Kevin.
It's great to be here, Joe.
And Kevin, as I was introduced, I'm surprised you didn't hang up on me.
That's a long introduction.
But I'm telling you the truth, man. I was thinking, what is Lauren thinking? I don't like the outdoors, I'm jealous of guys who do, because I grew up in the inner city in Miami, so I'm not used to that kind of stuff. So I can't wait. So I'm going to be like a child, Kevin, asking you questions.
Okay.
Because even though I'm old now, I still think I'm still in pretty decent shape and good shape. So I don't think it's too late. As long as I'm breathing, I don't think it's too late. Now, I'm not going to be climbing Mount Everest, but I can do some of the other stuff. Maybe they got a Mount Everest Junior that I can climb. I don't know.
Well, we all have mountains to climb, don't we?
That's right. That's right. Yeah. But Kevin, I know you're a busy man, so let's jump right into it. I always ask my guests to share with their favorite Bible verse that gives them inspiration from the Word of God. Man, what's yours?
Yeah, mine would be Proverbs chapter 25, verse 2, because it gives this idea that God, his glory is connected to the secret, and man's glory is connected to the search. So I feel like all of the outdoor exploits that I've been a part of and endeavors has really been about this idea of God putting a secret in front of me. Something that's encrypted, an algorithm, something that's mysterious, whether it's Noah's Ark or whether it's some physical quest that few have done before. And I think it's because of certain goals to be achieved. And then he has an agenda that's different than mine, which ultimately is achieved. So I have my plans and he had his purpose. But I really love that verse because I think it encapsulates what the whole noble journey of every man is, that there's a secret out there and that God is inviting you to be involved in that search. And in that search, you become a noble man.
Right, right. Now, Kevin, to say we've never had a man like you on the show would be an understatement. Now, we've had guys who have outdoor ministries and that kind of thing. But I've heard of men like you, but I've never met one. All right. I'm just being honest. All right. And I've traveled all over the country, man. I've been to 4 different countries, all, you know, speaking as, you know, speaker and everything, but I've never met men who are, as I consider, courageous and I guess risk takers like you. Tell us, how does a guy like you get involved in something like this?
Well, it's, you know, if you could just look under the hood for a minute, it's amazing what kind of engine drives this. So certainly I have been more risk inclined maybe than some folks. I've started businesses and some of them did well and some of them did not. I was very fortunate. All the mountains that I climbed as part of the Seven Summits attempt, I was able to summit on the first ascent, which is really a 50-50 scenario and a lot of weather conditions. So I think looking back now as a 51-year-old man, having done some of these things that to a lot of people appears to be very spectacular. I'm more interested in the inward journey right now. I'm kind of in that stage of my life. And so I'm asking more questions about, you know, the whys, what was driving that. And I found that many of the people that I went on these adventures with were not afraid of dying. That wasn't the issue. The issue, quite frankly, if you really got under the hood and became an authentic person, it was they were essentially scared of life. Some trauma in their past, they were running from something. I can't speak unequivocally, but I would say that the bulk of people who push the boundaries, push the envelope in the spirit of adventure are curious people. I'm ADD, so that probably helps a little bit as well. Mm-hmm. We are risk inclined, but I think when you dig down and really dig down, I think the question for the why is that they may be running from something. Mm-hmm. And so it's easier to get as far away from that problem as possible. So it becomes this existential issue where you're trying to distance yourself from your past, but you find that your past is always with you in the present.
Now, Kevin, you mentioned about looking under that hood. So let's look a bit under your hood. So what was driving you? Let's tell me about little Kevin and where this desire to push yourself to the limits and to go this far to do things like this. What was your childhood like? And was there some trauma there that kind of spurred you on to do something like this?
Well, my folks both grew up in World War II in the Netherlands. So when it says that I'm a son of immigrants, my parents are Dutch immigrants. They came here in the 50s after the war. I didn't have a single relative on this continent until after World War II in the 1950s. And so they grew up in unbelievable trauma that you and I could just not be able to connect with, to be actually subjugated to another evil empire, if you will, and to watch your relatives being killed, hiding Jews and going to concentration camps with them and being involved in the Dutch resistance. So there was trauma in their life that I'm not sure they were able to totally identify because it's collective and it's a people group. And so it's generational. But I had a good spiritual upbringing. And so my trauma was more connected with the first marriage that I had. And I have been married twice. So I just want to put that out up front there. Mm-hmm. And that's part of the story. And that's part of the quest as well, is that when you fail in relationships, it has a way of getting you off center. It feels like the center collapses and you feel like you're failing at really fundamental things in life, one of which is being a husband. Mm-hmm. I feel like I'm a much better father than I ever was a husband to both of my wives. And so I felt like the energy I was bringing to searching for Noah's Ark and doing all these quests was to somehow have one big spectacular success that would somehow overshadow any of the inward failures that I felt. And unfortunately, those type of external things never really takes care of the internal.
Right.
And especially with trauma, if a person is dealing with untreated trauma, they typically, if they can't do the 18 inches from the head to the heart, which is where trauma really lives, and also the brain, there's obviously some neurology behind that. But when they can't make that 18-inch journey and get deep inside their own life and inside their own story, instead of doing 18 inches, they have to go 18,000 miles, in my case, or 18,000 feet. Mm-hmm. Because you can't do that head to heart journey. So I tell people this way, we always externalize what we cannot internalize. So, and everybody, it's different. I know my journey has been unusual and that's attracted to some people. I feel like it's nothing really spectacular because I've lived it, but we all externalize things and it could be in the form of addictions or relationships, mm-hmm. or even ministry for that matter. That was actually an addiction in my life at one point. And I have to be careful it doesn't become that again, because that can become a mistress of sorts where it feeds this emotional energy and connectiveness that only God should be able to satisfy in your life.
You know, Kevin, man, you just bring up so many good points. You said we always externalize what we can't internalize. You know, I was joking as you coming on the show about how we couldn't be more polar opposites.
Yeah.
Based on what you just shared, we're exactly the same.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, where you said went 18,000 miles. No, I started running at 18,000 miles per hour of trying to say, okay, how much can I achieve?
Yeah.
Because I was looking for that quote, big success, because I was trying to run away from my trauma. That's why I was running so fast. And you're right, I never really thought about that, but that's what it became. I didn't want to do the internal work. So I figured I can cover it up with external success. And so, but I never looked at it that standpoint from a guy who's putting his life on the line and, you know, going to, he said, why do they go to such extreme measures? All I got to do is look inside of, why do I do it?
Yeah.
You know, it just manifests itself in different ways.
Yeah. And the inner city itself, there's a lot of collective trauma involved in that.
You know,
there's entire generations. We mentioned fatherlessness. There's entire generations that are growing up under a certain kind of trauma that, everything from gang warfare to gunshots throughout the night, and just that tension, it's really entering into a war zone. And I think that we just underestimate the collective harm that comes from that, that has a way of spewing out into further violence.
Mm-hmm. Now, Kevin, you mentioned, we mentioned Grace Explorations as your ministry. And you just talked about how you realize now that you had to do more internal work, but you did all these external things. Why did you decide to use Grace Explorations as the vehicle to reach and minister to men?
Well, the name, first of all, is my two favorite words, grace and exploration. So I think of all the words that are in the lexicon of Christianity, grace is just unique to us. There's no other world religion that really has a grasp of that. It's something that is so good, we'll never deserve it. It's God's biggest, best, and brightest idea. Maybe Bono with you too has an idea when he wrote that song, Grace, and it's a beautiful name. And it has the power to change the world. And that explorations to me speaks to the nobility in the heart of man, that we're all kings. Mm-hmm. Many of us are still in exile. We're wandering wounded wastelands, and we're trying to find our original identity, our original glory in Christ as beloved sons. And so Grace Explorations basically was birthed out of a lot of personal pain. You could call it the Cave of Adullam for those of your listeners that are Bible people. And in 1 Kings 22, it gives a very brief record of this cave that David wandered into as a fugitive, and poetically he probably lit the torch on the wall and thought he was alone and saw a couple hundred eyeballs staring back at him, which became the backbone of his kingdom. And so Grace Explorations, if no one else needs it, and in particular this idea of base camp that we've established, it's now becoming a nationwide movement, I need a band of brothers. I need to do community. I need to do life with men. I need to be known. I need to know other men. I need to know enough about them to care about them, so that when the lightning strikes and the thunder roars and the bullets start flying, if you will, we're there for each other because we care enough to know enough to actually do something for each other. So it kind of came out of that, of just sensing that, hey, I need community. I have to start doing life with people. A lot of explorers and adventurous are actually very singular type personalities. They're type A, they're very individualistic. They almost embrace a cowboy ethic, you know, where they're this lone ranger,
right,
on this interior geography that every man lives in, but they do life alone. And I did that for decades and it just didn't work. So I tell men now, you either journey together or you will die alone. And especially when you're on extreme adventures, or when you're in a battlefield, or even in the inner city, that's what's really the attraction to gangs, is it provides you some haven of identity, right, and safety.
Right.
You're wanting to belong to some type of tribe. This is something that's inherent to the masculine soul. We want to be tribal. We want to get back to our roots. We want to belong somewhere. Maybe even more powerful than belief. We want to belong. Mm. We want to have some place that we can call home. So I found that in many cases, you know, we don't get that because we live in these quiet, sunny, suburban lives, if you will, most of us. And we just don't understand that, you could live in a massive mansion and still be homeless.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You don't have a sense of centeredness. You don't know what home even looks like, because trauma and pain will actually kick you outside of your own house, outside of your own story. And we see the ultimate evil of that, or outcome of that, with suicide. It's people that can't play themselves in their own movie.
Right.
Because they don't like their movie anymore. They don't want to be in their own movie. They don't want to be in their own story. They want out. And so some of these people that you find that live these extreme lifestyles, one of which I could include myself, we're most susceptible to this type of a futility of been there, done that, check the boxes, and then you still feel empty at the end of the day.
Now, Kevin, what I don't understand then, though, obviously you say you have a desire for community. You wanted to be have a band of brothers. There are a lot of safer ways to do that.
Yeah.
What made you pick that as opposed to, okay, we're going to have a Bible study, or we're going to have, we can go bowling.
So yeah.
What made you go to that extreme?
So can I speak to the particulars of what Basecamp is, just to kind of give?
Right
okay.
Ahead.
So, Basecamp is essentially a place. I'll first speak to it in the external to give people an idea of what it is on a mountain. So a base camp on a mountain is the place. It's the place where conversations happen. It's where you calibrate how you're going to move up to higher camps. It's your medic tent. It's your communications tent. So everything is done at base camp. And when you climb higher up the mountain, as you would at Everest, when you get up to camp 3, which is Herculean, just to get to that point, because now you're entering close to the death zone. You're at 23,500 feet, just about 2,000 more feet, and you're in the death zone where literally your body is going backwards. You're a fish out of water. They'll take you all the way to camp 3 and have you sleep that night with oxygen, and then they'll do something that's unheard of. They'll take you through the Khumbu Icefall, which is a place where fatalities occur every Everest season. So you want to spend as little amount of time as you can in that area, because it's a series of these massive skyscraper size shaped ice blocks that could collapse at any given time, and go through that and then go all the way down to the trailhead at about 11,500 feet. And it's for this singular purpose. Nothing heals in thin air. So if you've got a paper cut, you have a pulmonary issue, cerebral, whatever, digestive, it's not going to heal in thin air. And so I tell a lot of men, look, you've got to sometimes get down from these summit experiences. You can't keep redlining yourself and doing these singular objectives or living this extremely driven life to succeed. You've got to get down into the valley. You have to get down where the air is thicker and heal with men. And it's not because you're bad. It's because you're not well. Mm-hmm. And that takes the shame off of it. So many who have had dramatic narratives in their life where they were way up here, you know, your Moses and David and Joseph guys that were at the top of their careers, if you will, and then a sudden dark descent that sometimes went on for decades. And it was not so much that they were bad people. It was that God was preparing them to climb a higher mountain than ever before. And to do that, he had to bring them lower than they've ever been before so that they could get what? To get well, which is right. What Jesus kept asking people. Do you want to get well? Mm-hmm. He really didn't ask him who, do you know who I am? You know, do you want to pray the sinner's prayer? No, he said, do you want to get well? Over and over and over again. And it was a great question, because some of us are not ready to get well.
Right.
Because to get well, we can't play the victim role anymore. To get well means we start rejecting passivity as men. To get well means we start becoming authentic. We start modeling Christ. To get well means that we not only reject passivity, but we accept responsibility and we lead courageously. If I can channel Robert Lewis here this morning, these are the marks of a man. And so that's the external. The way we interpreted that in suburbia, or anywhere for that matter, is we take base camp, the mythos and the ethos of that and the atmospheric elements of that that are alive and well in a mountain metaphor, and we place those in breweries all across North America, which is the growing phenomena. It's a cultural phenomena. And we place them inside breweries, which is problematic for some people. I get it. But we feel like God has asked us to do it. So I'm not too worried about what the opinions are. I have to do what God asked me to do. And so I'm going to answer to him someday. And I feel like this is what he's told us to do. And it's taken off like wildfire. We've had 1,200 guys that have now become a part of that over 6 or 7 different base camps over the last 2 years. And it shows no signs of slowing down. But it's essentially this. It's a place of stories for men. Men will tell a story. A single man, a singular man will tell a story. We do a Q&A. And we're hoping that in that redemptive, gospel-centered, Christ-honoring story, that in many cases is very dramatic, we bring in some of the best sinners the world has ever seen that have been redeemed by Christ. Mm-hmm. And we hope in the telling of that story, that men will also hear echoes of their own story and will be given the greatest gift of all, which is the gift to be able to interpret their own story. Kind of like what David and Joseph did for their culture. They were dream interpreters, and many men are walking in dark dreams, and they need someone to interpret their dream for them, their life for them. And we find that a man telling a story to another man is very helpful in that process.
And so I'm getting a better picture now. So basically the base camp is where really the bonding and community and the tribe happens. And is it from that you transition, or at least propose the idea of now going to do some of these extreme things? And that's where you recruit the guys from the base camp.
Yeah. So there's 2 different metaphors that are active here. I gave you the mountain metaphor, which is base camp, but in military, the military's had millennia, especially if you're in the Middle East, they've had millennia to figure this out. But base camp is a company size of men. So it's a Bravo company. It's the Saving Private Ryan. You know, it's 100, 150 guys that'll show up. Promise Keepers is now being resurrected from the dead. They're an right. entire field army of men. They're trying to get 80,000 guys together. And we're not a battalion size per se. We're a company size. And then from that, you move into platoons, 15 to 30 guys. And then from that, a squad of 8 or 10. And then from that, a fire team. So Promise Keepers is basically doing this stadium field army size of men. And then they're encouraging men to get into these fire teams into 3 or 4 men. And we fit somewhere in the middle. We do really well with the company size and we do really well with squads. So we tell men, hey, come to this bigger meeting because there's some level of anonymity here, just like you would at church.
Right.
Then we encourage them to really do life together. You've got to get together in a squad of men or preferably even a fire team and start sharing your life. And we let them do whatever they want in that group. They can just share stories. They can do Bible studies. They can do curriculum. It could be centered on an addiction. We have sex addict recovery groups. We have apologetics. We have PTSD recovery groups. So it runs the gamut. And we let men choose where they want to do life with and how they want to do life with. The point is don't be bound by the curriculum, be bound by the community. So if you're using curriculum, don't make that serve. That's there to serve the community, not the other way around. At the end of the day, guys have to get to know each other. Otherwise, once the study is done, or they get done arguing about what the Bible verse says, nobody really cares about each other because they never took the chance to really get into each other's stories.
Mm-hmm. You know, I've never heard that strategy before, because most ministries, if they're having small groups in quote, smaller communities, that I like what you just said, that is driven by the community, not the curriculum. So I've never heard of them having a theme-based group or community. Yep. And so I guess that just evolves kind of organically. You let that kind of evolve.
Absolutely. Yeah, community is a byproduct. It's not a program. Like people think, well, we'll just program community. No, community happens when you put guys together in a cave, and that cave becomes a man cave where men actually care. And men have to, vulnerability is huge to this. I mean, Brene Brown has written extensively on this, and there's been a lot of ministers that have figured out, hey, she's got something to say here. But I don't think the thing is really sin. I think the thing is actually shame. I think that's the master emotion. And we can have guys confess until the cows come home their sins to Christ, and he can forgive those. And that's a beautiful, wonderful thing because it's powerful. It's grace, right? Mm-hmm. But you'll never touch that man's shame unless you work on that horizontal line where he confesses his sins and his story, if you will, to another man. And that man recognizes and embraces his humanity and tells him, look, I'm going to walk with you in this thing. This is a journey. This is a process. This is a pilgrimage. Let's respect the journey. Let's trust the process. And let's stay in the story together and journey together, because then that shame starts to heal. And when that shame starts to heal, now you have true transformation, because men are no longer hiding. If they're hiding, they can't be healed. And if they can't feel, they can't heal. And feeling comes out of story. So the church does a wonderful job with sermons. They do a fantastic job with biblical studies. They do an incredible job with the sacraments, with socializing, and with songs. And we've parked our truck in a lane that's not very occupied, which I'm excited about because I'm an explorer. So I like to have, you know, a clear horizon in front of us, but we're parking our truck, if you will, or moving in the lane of story, which incidentally, of all those communication mediums that I've just given you, above all of those, Christ chose the medium of story to get across the truth, because I think he knew something in that story is the closest distance between the human heart and the truth. It gets to the point as quick as possible with as little obstacles in the way.
You know, Kevin, we prayed before we came on the air, allowing the Holy Spirit to lead us, because I wanted to get into grace explorations, but this is a side question, because you brought it up. You mentioned the church, and what you're saying, my spirit resonates with everything you're saying, right? Because I'm walking in it. I see our organization, what we're doing in ministry. And like you said, through the lives and the stories, but the truth of the matter is I run into a lot of men who are disenchanted with church.
Yeah.
And they, and I'm paraphrasing now of what most men tell me, Joe, I'm part of this, or ministries like what you and Kevin are doing, because I can't get this at my church. We don't share at that particular level. So Kevin, without, you know, I hate beating up on the church. But if there's a ministry leader out there who's leading men in their church, or a pastor out there who's listening right now, if you can kind of give them a free coaching session right now, a consulting session of what can they do as opposed to just sending them to us, you know, in these para ministries, but what, cause they're the first line. I mean, yep. They see these men because the wives are dragging them sometimes to church.
Yep. Yep.
What advice would you give to a men's ministry leader or a pastor of what they can do when they get the men at their church to kind of take advantage of what you're talking about?
Yeah. So first thing I would say is I was a pastor for 10 years, so I know what it's like to work in a church context. And mm-hmm. I know that they have a very, very difficult job to do. It's unfortunate that a lot of men's ministry movements are actually, I wouldn't say they're anti-church, but they're not very complimentary in their language towards the church.
Right.
And I always tell those guys, look, until you've walked in their shoes, you don't know what they have to do. They have to be a general hospital. Mm-hmm. You can't just focus singularly on men, which I think would be great from my perspective. And I think it would calm a lot of evils in our world. But yeah. They have to take care of everybody from cradle to grave that I don't have to worry about. And so it'd be like a heart specialist going up to a family practitioner and demeaning that person because he doesn't have a specific skill set that a heart surgeon has, when in reality, you need general care physicians to take care of a lot of different needs that can then prescribe their patients to a specialist.
Right.
And so our partnership with the church and with men's ministry leaders is we're like a bunch of specialists. We're basically here for men. It's all we do. We specialize in it. And so we have these story-driven formats, but particular to Base Camp, we have ordained ministers that come to Base Camp. And it's a brewery. So there's obviously beer there, but there's also non-alcoholic beverages. So people have ultimate choices of what they can make. We have alcoholics that come and we have alcoholics that cannot come.
Right.
But we do have ordained ministers that'll come that have a covenant. Or a personal conscience that just says, look, I don't want to drink, but they'll bring a man that they can't get to their own church to Base Camp because they realize that the power of the gospel is done through this sense of incarnation where Jesus became Emmanuel, right? He became God amongst us in a barn and then died naked on a cross, came naked in the world, left naked in the world in two places that nobody ever would have expected. His entry point was a barn instead of a palace. His exit point was a cross instead of a cathedral. It's exactly the kind of narrative that you and I wouldn't write. And that's why we know it's true, because it's God doing his thing. And so I just encourage guys, look, bring these guys to Base Camp. You don't have to, it's not about beer. It's about brotherhood. And we have great videos on our website that we can allude to later on that will help them visualize this, but it's about brotherhood. It's about story. It's about the gospel. It's about seeing the image of Christ in another man's brokenness and seeing the light shine through the cracks, if you will. But these guys will come, ministers or men who don't drink, and they'll bring another man with them because they know that that man, that's his environment. So now he's going into an area where he may not be totally comfortable with, but he's doing it because it's emblematic of the gospel. It's emblematic of the life of Christ. Jesus was always going into places that the religious people could not go to because he realized that his presence actually sanctified any place that he stepped into.
Right.
So Jesus is revealing himself in breweries now all across North America. And it's astounding because it's disarming it. We're like, well, I thought he only does this stuff in church. No, he does it anywhere. He has the ability to reveal himself in our lowest depravity, right?
Yeah.
Not that breweries are a place of depravity. And that's another thing that we're dealing with is some people think this is their grandpa's tavern, you know, where the walls are dark and everybody's hitting on women. It's like, you know, these are European breweries. They're families come to this. It's well lit. It's handcraft. It's artisan. It's organic. It's authentic. That's the key word. So we tell people with Base Camp, we brew what men thirst. What is that? Authenticity, an authentic life. There's something about a man that wants to feel authentic. And I think at the end of the day, if you're going to be an authentic man, you're going to be a Christ follower. And so we're just partnering with a cultural phenomena, piggybacking on that, similar to what any great evangelistic ministry has done throughout the centuries, is instead of being antagonistic towards that, let's just say, hey, wow, how can we partner with this cultural phenomena and make it a place of redemption for men?
So basically, Kevin, what you're saying then, to kind of summarize this, if we're talking to church leaders out there or pastors, get your men outside of the church. Expand the church to be outside of the four walls of the church. You know, and you said, and it makes me reflect back on how I got into men's ministry. I was the men's ministry leader at my church. And just one day I just asked the guys, I said, you guys want to meet at a different location? And of course, they all agreed. And don't you know, the ministry grew faster and bigger.
Yep.
we left the church. I'm like, what's going on? We just did is just move locations.
Yeah.
Yet it grew bigger and bigger. So I'm hoping that the men ministry leaders out there who are listening, they will heed your advice. And I told you, Kevin, I didn't want to get too sidetracked because I love talking about connecting with men and how to relate to men better. But I brought you on because I'm just so curious about beyond base camp, because I can hang out at a bar, even though I don't drink. I love being around men. I love sharing stories. But what you do when you get that small unit to say, we're going to go do this kayaking, or we're going to mountain climb, and we're going to do all this other stuff. That stuff is just intimidating to me. And some of the toughest guys I grew up with as a kid were like me. Now they're intimidated by the outdoors, but yet they're the toughest guys I know.
Yeah.
So what do you say to guys like me to get us to step out of the boat, so to speak, and give it a shot? Because I got to assume all the guys that you meet in base camp, they're not all excited about going on these expeditions.
Yeah, we don't really
talk them into it. How do you do that?
Yeah, we don't. So that's part of my background, and I it's undeniable. I was a guide, if you will, not professionally certified. I was just the guy that had the most experience on 5 summers on Mount Ararat, where we were looking for Noah's Ark. But what we do now is more. It's more the interior geography. So we do, you know, some hiking or camping stuff, but it's very impromptu. But I just have to say one more thing back to base camp, and then I'll jump into this. Sure. Our mission at Grace Explorations is not to get more men to go to church. Our mission is to help more churches go to men.
Right, right.
And so we're trying to shift that paradigm of, hey, we're here to partner with churches. We're not antagonistic. We're complementary. We're collaborating. That's a good word in what we do with churches, is we're here to go after men. But as far as the outdoor adventure thing, you know, everybody's wired different. And you mentioned the out of the boat reference. I think men will get out of the boat when they hear the words of Jesus, whether that means physically climbing a mountain or kayaking a stream or going on some crazy adventure or doing something that scares them, that if God doesn't help them, it's not going to happen. So I think what we're talking about here is not necessarily the physical aspect of it. It's doing what God has asked you to do or has created you to do. And whether that's an outdoor adventure or starting a new ministry, I mean, it took tremendous courage for you to launch something that didn't exist before.
Right.
So you may feel like a guy from the inner city, but you actually emblematically, if I'm looking at the symbols of your life, you actually look a lot more like Lewis and Clark to me than a kid that grew up in the inner city of Miami, because you are blazing a trail. And what you're doing is you're going out, you're doing something nobody's ever done before. You're taking some of the arrows, you're taking some of the hits, because that's what explorers and adventurers do. But here's the beauty of what you're doing, and hopefully what we're doing at Grace Explorations is now we can bring back a map, right? Mm-hmm. Lewis and Clark were able to go back to the president of the United States at the time and say, look, we've charted this thing. We know there's this giant, massive ocean on the other side called the Pacific, and here's the route that we took. And all of a sudden, the imaginations of entire generations were just lit up because they saw something they didn't see before. And it's what you're doing. You're lighting imagination. So whether it's the physicality of it, and there are ministries out there that do more of that type of thing, where they'll take guys on arduous trips. And we do retreats, and they are in wilderness settings, but we're not there to beat them up physically. I think the hardest journey of all, again, is getting a man outside of his head or out of his head into his heart. There's right. nothing more arduous than that,
right?
Because it requires tremendous courage for a man to go back into his past where his pain is. And we're asking men to do that, whether it's physically on a trail or if it's in a story retreat. We're asking him to go back to his pain because we know intuitively, and I don't understand how this works, and it's almost diabolical. It's divine and diabolical at the same time. If you can get a man back to his pain, you may find that he'll also find his purpose as well, because our pain actually encrypts our purpose. So the reason why we were born is often wrapped in pain. And that's why most men are never able into that deeper life that Henry David Thoreau talked about, that a man's deepest life comes to him as if it's a waking dream. It has an ethereal quality to it, something that's otherworldly, because it is otherworldly. When you tap into your deepest destiny, it feels like you're dancing with the divine, and you never enter into that unless you're willing to embrace the pain. I mean, you can see these throughout all the stories, whether biblical or mythological, from Star Wars to Lord of the Rings to anything. Every man has to go backwards before he goes forwards. And so if we do anything on a trail physically, and I was just a part of one 2 weeks ago that some other men led, that was a bit arduous. You know, a couple of us got lost for a little bit and we had to figure out where we were going. And there was a bonding that happened with that and a certain trust level. But the bigger story was when we sat around the campfire at night and guys were spewing out stuff that they thought they were going to take the grave with them. Because there's something about facing a fire and having the stars lit up above and the smoke and the smell of free men filling the atmosphere. There's something about that scene that just makes men want to tell tales. Mm-hmm. And they spill out their secrets. And in the process of that, their shame starts to be healed because other men are affirming the image of Christ that they see in that man through his brokenness, which he can't see because he's too close to his story.
You know, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, Kevin, but as you're speaking, I mean, just my spirit is stirring. And because you're in the trenches, you see this all the time. When you watch, aren't you just sitting there sometimes thinking, I wish every man I've ever known, I've ever met, could experience this?
Oh, absolutely.
You know, it would just set him free and liberate him beyond his wildest dreams because he's trapped by his trauma.
Yeah.
And yet to see, I mean, you can't even contain yourself because you keep thinking, wow, if I could get men to see this, to feel this, to experience this. And they wonder sometimes where our passion comes from because we've seen the side of man where God meant us to be. And then yeah. we see men who appear to be strong, we know based on what we know about men and about ourselves that, wow, they really don't get it. And we wish they can be exposed to it to see. Do you feel that way a lot of times?
Oh, absolutely. And you know, it's heartbreaking. And I've had guys tell me, look, Kev, you're not going to catch every fish.
Right.
And there are some men like me, I have to remind myself, I spent, I was a professional minister. I was an ordained minister. I was a national consultant. I climbed the spiritual ladder. I was a spiritual denominational big shot. And I was also a religious, self-righteous religious robot at the same time. Right. Unfeeling, unempathetic, just pure robotics. I knew how to do the religion thing really well, better than most, but I spent decades living outside the campfire, wandering in the darkness, afraid of the light because I was concerned that if people saw who I was in my totality, the glory of God and the sinful nature that we all carry with inside of us, if they saw that, they wouldn't want to be a part of my life anymore. Right. So I kept this mask on. And when you keep that mask on for so long, it's really hard to rip it off because part of your face, your identity comes with it. But also you've discovered that people are starting to love the mask and not you. And so if you take the mask off, that love, that image, that idea of the hero vanishes and you're concerned that, will anybody love me just for being who I am? At a core level, not for what I do, right. Not performance, but just who I am.
Right, right. And see, and we tie our identity so much in what we do that we forget who we are.
Yeah.
God says we are. Kevin, let me ask you this, man. What has been your greatest challenge in ministering to men through your ministry? What has been presented you with the greatest challenge? Because you guys had a lot of success, but what has been your biggest challenge?
Yeah, I mean, just to be honest with you, it's just trying to fund this thing.
Amen, yeah. Brother. Oh, so, that sounds like a stupid question to ask.
Yeah. we're more alike than what you think. So, my son said, my son has studied World War II and all the great battles. And he came to me about a half a year ago. He's now 15. And he said, Dad, I've studied all the battles and I figured it out that every battle was won or lost before the first bullet was fired. Mm. And I said, what were your conclusions? He says, well, it's all supply chain dynamics. He said, if a better army is not as equipped or as outfitted or as ammoed up or as well fed or rested, it doesn't matter how good of an army they are. If they don't have the supply chain, if their fuel isn't there and their bullets and their sense of rest and momentum, they're going to lose.
Right.
And so I took that to heart. So right now we're going crazy. The momentum is all there. We've got men, we're multiplying. There's just this sense of, wow, God's really a part of this. And it started out as just a little idea that God whispered to me and my ministry partner at the time. And then it just exploded. But our biggest concern right now is we have to fund this thing. We have to have men step forward and say, I believe in this enough to become a monthly or an event sponsor. So, but more than that, I think, the hardest thing is to just get men to be real. And it requires a tremendous amount of vulnerability on the part of leadership to keep that atmosphere alive. If you want God to reveal himself, he is attracted to the real more than he is the right, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. There's something about being real that just enamors Christ. It captivates him. So he was always trying to get people to give him the real answer rather than the right answer.
Right.
In church, if we're not careful, we always tend to reward the right answer and not the real answer, but you can't get to the right part unless you get to the real part first.
Right.
So just getting men to be real, is always presented to be a challenge. And then just to get men to get beyond the consumer mindset, which we've done so well in America of, hey, this thing is really happening and I like this program better than this program, to get guys out of the consumer model where they realize that this is not about consumerism. This is actually not even about you per se. This is about the gospel. This is about Christ. And to get them from that angle to community, where they care about each other, where they're not critiquing things or standing off, they're engaging, they're conversating, there's change, there's catalytic transformative change that's happening. And that can only happen in a community rather than a consumer mindset. So we're trying to stay out of this. We have a product and we know you like it, so we're going to keep producing it, and instead flip the narrative on its head and say, it's not about the product, because you can't program community. It's really about giving you guys an opportunity to do life with men, which just so happens to be in breweries, but we encourage it to happen anywhere in a small group wherever men meet.
No, Kevin, you're inspiring me because I know it can be tough work with men. Exactly what you're saying is, you know, one, we need the funding, but at the same time, we need men to get real. And it seems a lot, and again, correct me if I'm wrong on this, because you have experience being a pastor. It seems a lot of time, by the time men get to us, we have to kind of deprogram them.
Yeah.
because they've been taught a certain type of way in the church environment, in their way of thinking, that they're not used to being in an environment. Wait a minute. First of all, we're meeting in a brewery, you know, yeah. And then wait a minute, you're talking about what?
Yeah.
Sharing what? And they'll tell you, I'm just not used to this. I didn't grow up this way. And we know we hear older generations say, we never talked about this kind of stuff with our children or with other men. And so do you find yourself doing a lot of that? I guess I don't even know how to ask the question, but how do you go through the process of, quote, deprogramming men to help them transition into this new model, this new paradigm that you're talking about?
Yeah. So part of our value statement is this, and there's several values, but one of those is particular to your question is we are about wounding Pharisees and welcoming prodigals.
Oh, say that again, Kevin. I like that.
So we are, that'll preach.
Oh, yes, it will. Yes, it will. I love that.
We're about wounding Pharisees and welcoming prodigals. And the reason why I put those two words together, Pharisee and prodigal, is that man, and it's two guys, but they're kind of split because they're divorced from each other because they can't co-join each other. In every man, there's a man who's going to fling blood and throw it in a sense of spiritual pride. Where he actually becomes his own worst enemy, because if he's not throwing stones at somebody, he's throwing them at himself. Mm-hmm. And that could be done in scapegoating, which I think when we talk about a lot of the racial tensions in North America, a lot of that is scapegoating. It's one ethnicity projecting their shame onto someone else rather than looking internally and saying, hey, you know what? We're all created in the image of Christ, and far be it from me to take my shame and project that onto someone else because I can't process my own shame, which is really what happened at the cross. Mm-hmm. The religious community projected all their shame onto a singular innocent individual and scapegoated him in the most horrific manner through crucifixion, when at the end of the day, what they really needed to do, which happened a couple chapters later in the book of Acts, where they were cut to the heart because they realized that, wow, we are the sinners. Right. And this man died for us. But you can't have that happen unless the Pharisee is wounded and the prodigal is welcomed home. So inside every man is a man who is throwing mud at everybody else, mm-hmm. self-righteous, religious robot, unfeeling, because he always has to be right. That's the problem with being religious, is you always have to be right.
Right.
You can never be real. Yeah. That's the nature of a robot. You know, a robot computes and analyzes and spits out the right answers. But a robot, if you cut him, he bleeds circuitry. Mm-hmm. We're trying to get guys to the point where when I cut you, there's blood. There's actual realness there. But to the other individual, the prodigal, he's not throwing mud. He's just wallowing in it. Mm. And he's just eating it. And he's just, he forgot who he was, that he was a beloved son. And so when he comes back to the father, he's just saying, look, I'll just be a servant. I'll be a slave. You know, slaves behave, servants do tasks. And the father was so demonstrative of the gospel, really. He basically just said, look, I want you to remember who you are. You're my son. And I know you wished me dead, and that's why you wanted your inheritance, which is the same thing as wishing me dead, because I was still alive and you wanted your inheritance. But the real prodigal in that story is actually the older son.
Right.
Who also did not realize what he had by being the son of his own father. And so he was throwing mud at his younger brother. His younger brother was wallowing in mud. And in between those two guys is the perfected man, is the man that I'm trying to get after. And how do you get that man to be real? Well, you have to wound his pride. So part of the brewery, that wounds people's spiritual pride, because their pride says God can only do what he needs to do in a church, in the castle. And humility says, no, let's charge the field. Let's realize that Jesus did his work in culture, not against it or apart from it or antagonistic towards it, but God did his redemptive plan, his rescue plan in the middle of culture, at parties, with Pharisees, with tax collectors, with prostitutes and the ilk, zealots, you know, everybody in between. Jesus always showed up in the middle of a party and revealed himself in the most unlikely of ways. In fact, almost all of his ministry, a lot of it was due to size, was in the open fields, was at people's homes. And so we're trying to take that element of wounding the pride, wounding the Pharisee in a man. He has to be wounded. If he's not, he'll never stumble into grace, because he thinks he can ascend into it, but you actually descend into grace. And then we're also there to pick that guy up at the mud and to get that mud off his eyes and to remind him, look, first and foremost, at a fundamental level, you are a beloved son. You're better than a sheep. You're better than a slave. You're better than a servant. You're even better than a saint or a sinner or a soldier. All those have a place in this metaphoric mountain. But at the peak of this mountain, you are a beloved son. This is who you are at your core. And nothing you do, whether you throw mud or wallow in mud, will ever change the fact that you belong to the Father.
Wow. You know, Kevin, I'll tell you, you know, we were rushed for time today because of some technical difficulties we had before we came.
Which are all my fault.
No, don't throw yourself.
You were very gracious to me. I'm one of those old guys, you know, I just don't do Skype very much, or in this case, Zoom.
But the only thing about it, we don't have time to go into the man up questions, but I had like other questions I wanted to ask you. But when you closed with that, I thought that was a beautiful way of putting it. I know you've preached on that, haven't you?
It's weird. I don't look at myself as a preacher anymore. I talk and I share. And so it's more in a story format, which, you know, it's funny how a story can actually become a sermon if you just let it be the actual sermon. Just put all the truth inside a story. Mm-hmm. And guys, especially, I think that's what tunes them off the church, is they're so used to sermons and the songs and the sacraments and the socializing aspect, that they just tune out, because it's something they've grown up with for decades. But when you come at them in an unfamiliar place with a story, it's as if something very old becomes new again. It's the same gospel. It's just told in a different way. And that's the power, I think, of the Spirit, is he's able to take these things that you know, but you've never fully embraced. It's not part of your inner world, because that shame hasn't been touched. And even more specifically, the trauma has remained untreated.
But how you just presented that with the Pharisee and the prodigal, I just love that. That was a beautiful illustration. And I never looked at it from that perspective of both of those people can exist within us and they have to be addressed. You know, I've heard, I forgot where I heard it, but I know I stole it from someplace. They said Jesus came to comfort the afflicted, but to afflict the comfortable.
There you go.
You know, but we always look at it being two separate people, but basically they're the same person a lot of times, when based on how, where we are and what season we are and how we look at other people from the outside. But I will give you one more thing to close the show out with, because I thought that was beautiful, but I just something my spirit tell me, I want you to share one more thing. And it'll be this: based on your years and your experience and working with men, let's say, and we were just talking about a mutual friend of ours, Coach K, who's passed away, who we love dearly. If you knew you were not going to wake up tomorrow, I hate to paint that picture for you, Kevin, but if you knew you weren't going to wake up tomorrow and you had to share something with the men out there who are listening today, what would you tell them?
Follow Christ. Just become so... become so enamored with who he is that you just follow him at any cost. and be known at the end of the of your day as a follower of Christ, and then maybe concurrently with that, that you were a friend of sinners. Mm-hmm. That that there was something about you that sinners celebrated over, and conversely, and you don't set out to do this, but it'll happen. But that will also cause not only the sinners to celebrate, but the Pharisees to complain. And so I rejoice, you know, when I meet a man who is adversarial towards what we're doing. I used to become very defensive, and now I'm like, you know what? I feel like this is what God's called us to do, so I really don't have to defend myself, but I pray for that man because I know that that man still exists inside me. It's a man who's wandering in darkness and is looking and struggling for answers, but who also can be redeemed. There were several Pharisees that came to Christ in the book of Acts. The Bible's very explicit. Sadducees and Pharisees that actually became quote unquote born again. And so I would just say to men, follow Christ, listen for his voice, and keep it simple. Look at yourself as a follower of Jesus, even before the church was even put together. And we had the luxury a couple years back of taking 12 guys to Israel on a retreat where we learned about Christ's story and the big story during the day and went to the physical site. So it was unbelievable. But at night, every man got a chance to tell his story over the course of 10 days. And so it was this mingling of our stories with the gospel story, with Christ's story, with the big epic meta-narrative story of the biblical narrative. And at the end of the day, we realized that God is actually writing his story through us. Mm-hmm. And that's maybe why God created humans in the first place, is he loves the idea of story, and he loves to be part of stories and tell stories and hear stories. And that's what humans do. And if we can do that for God, that would be great.
Thank you, guys. We're talking to Kevin DeVries of Grace Explorations. Kevin, thank you so much for being so gracious with your time and joining us on the Real Men Connect podcast. Man, this has been a blessing to me, brother.
I appreciate you. And I do want you to see yourself as a Lewis and Clark. You may be a guy from the inner city, but you are paving the way. And I think what God is enabling you to do is to bring back a map for other people to follow. So thank you for your courage.
Well, thank you. You know, I never looked at it that way until you said it. And now I'm never going to forget that. I'm going to say I'm just like Lewis and Clark. So next time some guy tried to get me on a hiking trip, I said, no, man, no, I don't have, you know, you're not going to make me feel bad because I'm not going on a hiking trip. I'm doing that right now.
You're already doing it. That's
exactly
the whole thing.
I'm already doing it.
You're already doing it. The symbols are all there. It's so big we can't see it, but the symbols are all there. You are a Lewis and Clark kind of man.
Now, Kevin, quickly for our listeners, if they wanted to find out more about you and your ministry and what you're working on, how can they reach out to you? How can they connect with you, man?
Yeah, so just go to graceexplorations.com. There's a bunch of base camp information there. There's also story retreats, which we're just starting up, which enable men to walk through their own story. So we have licensed therapists that actually, I call them soul surgeons, but they can walk a man through a story because it's not just about hearing a story. That's part A. Part B is learning how to tell your story, because Revelations 12:11 is very powerful. We defeat and we advance the kingdom, defeat the enemy and advance the kingdom by two things, the blood of Christ and by the word of your testimony. Right. If you can contemporize that word, it's story. So everything right. we do is story-based, but there's all kinds of ideas. And if someone's a men's minister there, there's podcasts and everything on our media page. Hopefully we'll post this one up as well that men can listen to and maybe learn something from.
Fantastic. Thanks, Kevin. And what we'll do, we'll put that in the show notes as well, so they'll have a way of accessing that if they're driving, listening to this. That's graceexplorations.com. We'll also put some other contact information that you can reach out to Kevin as well. And guys, if you like today's show, please do us a favor. And this is so important. Take about 30 seconds to go over to iTunes and rate the program for us, because it's the best way to help us get this program in the hands, ears, and hearts of men just like you. And please don't keep us a secret. Share us with your friends. Guys, you've made us now the number one podcast for Christian men in the country. And we appreciate that. So keep on sharing, keep on downloading, and keep on subscribing. So until next time, I'm Joe Martin, your man builder with realmenconnect.com, reminding you that we are males by birth, but we are men by choice. So each and every day, choose to be that man that God has called and created you to be, because a male is a terrible thing to waste. So until next time, I'll talk to you soon. God bless, and stay in his grip.
Thank you for listening to the Real Men Connect podcast with Dr. Joe Martin. Real Men Connect isn't just a podcast. It's a mission, ministry, and movement to help good men become the great men God called and created us to be. And the best is yet to come. So if you enjoyed this episode, go ahead and leave us a review in iTunes. It really helps us to build the podcast and to reach, teach, and impact more men, all for the glory of God. And make sure you check out realmenconnect.com to get our free tools and resources to help you go from good man to great man God's way. Again, that's realmenconnect.com. Thank you for listening. We'll see you in the next episode.